Chapter 37, Leave-Taking of Seven Stars and Nidong. The morning star was twinkling all alone in the heavens. The pastures were covered with hoarfrost, and the tall poplars by the Narin Gaul pointed upward to the sky, which was just turning blue. A fog floated over the river. "So this is the day of parting," thought Seven Stars sadly when she came out of the yurt. The poodle looked up but did not stir. It was too early. He waited until Seven Stars came and sat down with the mortar and pestle to pound up the brick tea. This awoke Christian, Big Tiger, and Affliction. The sheep and camels had long since been lying with their eyes open, and the horses, it was impossible to know whether they ever slept, were standing at the line. The coats of moonlights and thunderbolts, overridden stallions, were rough and pasted with dried sweat, and the hoarfrost glistened on their fetlocks and manes. "Oh, you poor creatures," cried Seven Stars, laying aside the mortar. "I forgot you last evening." She ran to the line and loosened their reins. Before lying down, the horses rolled on their backs, all fours in the air, beating up a cloud of dust, snorting with pleasure, and making their rough coats look even shaggier. "Why do they do that?" asked Christian. "Because they're itching," said Seven Stars. "Oh, I see," said Christian. And he thought of the glacis in Peking, where horses didn't roll on the ground, but were rubbed down and covered with a blanket when they had sweated. He went to open the sheep pen, Big Tiger untied the camels, and in the yurt, Affliction made the tea. They were at breakfast when Nidong and Good Fortune arrived. "Have you had a good journey?" asked Seven Stars, and her father replied, "Yes." Christian and Big Tiger looked at the camels, which were walking along with stately tread, their heads high. They were young and strong. Their humps were fat and large, and their protruding upper lips gave them a haughty, insolent expression. One of them carried, on a pack saddle, the blue tent in which Affliction and Springtime Snake had lived. The poles swung up and down as the animal walked. "Don't unload," cried Good Fortune. "We have to start at once." Christian and Big Tiger felt a stab through their hearts, and Seven Stars, who also heard these words, turned away. Suddenly, all joy had gone out of life. The camels roared angrily when made to kneel down, and even the rising sun failed to cheer. It only warned them to hurry. Christian and Big Tiger became sadder and sadder, and Good Fortune said, "We have to be at the Morin Gaul by evening, and we'll travel through the night." "Go in and drink your tea, Good Fortune," cried Nidong. "We'll be saddling." "It's always like this," sighed Affliction. "When you're merry and comfortable somewhere, you're suddenly told, 'Pack up, there's a carload of devils coming.'" He brought out his own saddle and Springtime Snake's and lengthened the cinches to go round the camels' bellies. Nidong produced two old wooden saddles with quilted covers for Christian and Big Tiger. Besides the nose cords, the camels had plaited goat's hair halters. "In case of emergency," said Nidong, "for a nose cord can break." "But," said Christian. "Unfortunately," said Nidong, "there's no but. It's high time to be off." "We know that well," said Christian, "but..." "Hamaga!" cried Nidong. "What's the trouble?" "It's this," insisted Christian. "The old Marin brought no money." Nidong laughed. "The rain often falls late," he said. "I'll be able to give you some for your journey." "It's not that," said Christian. "Big Tiger and I have enough for an emergency, but the camels..." "They're yours," said Nidong solemnly. "There's nothing more to be said." "Thanks 10,000 times," said Christian and Big Tiger. But Nidong shut his ears. "How much money have you got?" he asked quietly. "About 45 silver boxes between us." "That's sufficient," declared Nidong. Then he asked Seven Stars if there was any news, and she told him about the visit of Moonlight and Thunderbolt. She also said something about Gunchuk and the horses, but she whispered this, and her father muttered, "Good." "Come on, men, mount," he cried aloud. "Yabona!" Good fortune and affliction came out of the yurt, the latter carrying his gun. I've still got 10 cartridges, he said, so the thunder may roll and the night may fall. We're ready for anything. Everyone looked at him, astonished at these brave words. Forgive my unseemly bragging, he said, suddenly abashed. But it's true. I hit the mark whenever I fire. Therefore, 10 cartridges are plenty. I'll go part of the way with you, said Nidong. Christian and Big Tiger bowed to Seven Stars. We wish you joy, they said. May your days be long and happy. Come here, Compass Mountain, said Seven Stars. They entered the yurt. There was little light in it, and Seven Stars shut the door behind them. Two big tears were rolling down her cheeks, but she was smiling. Holding his two ears, she kissed Christian right in the middle of his mouth. Then she pushed back the door, and they stepped out into the sunshine where Big Tiger was waiting. I'm of no importance, and I possess nothing, said Seven Stars, sobbing, as she drew a haddock from her belt. Therefore, I have no present to give you except the dog. He is to go with you. That's quite impossible, cried Christian. He's a dog in 100. Never could we accept so great a gift. He's a night watcher and a carrier of express news, said Big Tiger. You can't possibly do without him. Seven Stars knelt down and laid the haddock on the ground in front of her, saying simply, the dog no longer belongs to me. Christian picked up the haddock and raised it to his forehead, while Big Tiger bowed in silence. Then Christian took the Duke of Hanta's sky blue haddock out of the briefcase. On it he laid General Wu's comb, which had never been used, and said, it is with our hearts we thank you. This is only a trifling keepsake. The very stones and cliffs bow before your generosity, said Big Tiger. Seven Stars took the haddock, lifted up her arms, and ran weeping into the yurt. Yabona, cried Nidong, it's time to be off. Why are you standing there like lost chickens, Good Fortune chided them. Hurry up. Seven Stars came out of the tent again. Father, she called, the dog is no longer mine. He's to go with Compass Mountain and Big Tiger. That's a grand idea, cried Nidong. Dog, come with us. At this, the poodle sprang up on him, barking joyfully. Nidong was the only one on horseback. I'll be home tonight, he called back to Seven Stars. Then he took his place at the head of the procession. Good Fortune rode behind him on a stately camel. He had no saddlebag, but his pistol holster looked splendid and warlike with its red silk tassel hanging over his gray quilted coat. Next came Affliction, who was far better equipped. In front of him lay his military coat with the gold buttons, and his big gun, with which he could shoot so surely, hung from his shoulder. He leaned back a little in his saddle, for he was leading the pack camel behind him, laden with the blue tent, the spades, and Christian's fur coat. Christian and Big Tiger, sitting lightly in their saddles, like experienced camel riders, each with a whip hung on his wrist, brought up the procession. May your road be easy and good, cried Seven Stars. We wish you peace, cried Big Tiger. Christian wanted to call out too, but he couldn't, for he had to bite his lips to keep from crying. But he waved to her with both hands, and she called out, Se Yabona! She kept calling, Se Yabona! Until the riders were far away. Then she threw herself weeping on the ground. There was no one to see her, and not even the poodle was there to comfort her. He was running merrily ahead and was first to cross the Naringal. As he shook the water from his coat, his eyes shone like black buttons. Then he ran up the slope and down again, barking loudly. They were traveling faster than ordinary caravans, for the camels had no heavy loads. As they passed the point where the wheel tracks turned south, Good Fortune tapped his pistol. Let it be, said Nidong. Seven Stars tells me there are other people, too, on the lookout for Greencoat.
"How's that?" asked Good Fortune brusquely. "What do you mean? Moonlight was in my tent last night. Didn't you notice that?" "He didn't leave any visiting card," said Good Fortune irritably. "It must have been an informal visit." "He was in a hurry," admitted Nidong. "But he took the stallion, so you could have seen he had been there."
"He left a message for our revered elder," cried Big Tiger.
"Then tell it to me. Perhaps it's urgent."
"We were to tell our revered elder," reported Big Tiger, "that he need have nothing to fear."
"Is that all?"
"That's all."
"The message," Good Fortune remarked scornfully, "is not very urgent."
"But it's good news," said Nidong. "On the road you have before you, such words are precious."
"I know what you mean," muttered Good Fortune, "and I also know who you mean. But words of that kind are like a drawer that you open and find empty."
Nidong said nothing more. He would have expected Good Fortune to be pleased, but he wasn't. He muttered in a tone of vexation, "We'll just see." And after a while, "There's something behind this."
"Ah," sighed Affliction, "there are many things you can't know and many things you can't see. Perhaps even behind those trees." He meant the poplars by the Dunder Gaul, which fringed the horizon. They were stately trees, and the Dunder Gaul was a real river. The slope which led down to the ford was trodden with fresh camel tracks. Good Fortune knit his brows as he observed them.
"A caravan must have passed here yesterday or the day before," he said. "Didn't you see it?"
"We heard the bells," said Big Tiger.
"But only in the distance," said Affliction. "In fact, hardly at all."
"The dog was barking so loudly," said Christian.
"It wouldn't surprise me if that scoundrel is just ahead of us," muttered Good Fortune.
"Who do you mean?" asked Nidong, all unsuspecting.
"Ah, I was just thinking of a mean fellow we met on the way. It was hard to persuade the miserly creature to sell us a bag of rice."
Saying this, he urged his camel into the river, which flowed more slowly than the Narangal, but was deeper. Nidong had to draw up his knees, the poodle had to swim, and only the two young camel riders were completely at ease.
"It's not far from the lake," said Nidong. "That's why the water flows slowly."
As they rode on, Christian took out the map and opened the western sheet.
"Here are the twin lakes," he said. "One is called the Gashenor and the other the Sokonor. All the tributaries of the Etzengal flow into them, and they don't all flow out again."
"Is all that written on your map?" asked Nidong, astonished.
"Yes, it's all there," said Good Fortune loftily, "and a lot more."
"Am I on it too?" asked Nidong.
"Not yet," Good Fortune explained. "But when Compass Mountain goes home to where they make the maps, he'll say to the map makers, 'There's something missing here,' and they'll say, 'Please forgive our ignorance,' and then they'll insert what is lacking and write in, 'Here dwells Nidong,' the picture sheet."
Nidong asked to have the map passed to him and examined it with due respect.
"Here's where we are now," said Christian, bending down from his camel. "We have still 40 li to the Morangal."
"This map is a precious thing," said Nidong politely.
"It's a priceless document," said Good Fortune. "I realized that the minute I saw it."
"What is it like at the Sokonor?" asked Christian.
"Like everywhere else in the world," answered Nidong. "There's land and water."
"A sad place, probably," said Affliction.
"Well, yes, it is a bit melancholy," Nidong agreed. "The Sokonor is as big as the sea, but the Gashenor is still bigger. Around it there is a white fringe. It is not the winter's snow, but salt, and beyond that is nothing but yellow desert. The water of the lake is blue and more beautiful than the sky. It is beautiful beyond all telling, and above it stands the Nojin Rogdo, the mountain of the gods. But you can't drink a drop of that blue water, for by heaven's decree,
It tastes of salt and is not for man. And isn't that sad enough? Asked Affliction. Even here it's none too cheerful. And he pointed all around with his whip. They were traversing a great plain, and the ground was hard and covered with sand and little stones. The caravan track went straight through it like a furrow westward. It was barely visible, but still it was there, and it was the only thing to hold on to. The sun was climbing higher, the day was warm, and the poodle was running quietly beside the camels. They walked at a steady pace, one behind the other. Naidong began to sing, and Christian said to Big Tiger, I'm hungry. So am I, said Big Tiger. There are two standards of living, Affliction held forth. We have now reached the 13 grains of millet stage, where often you eat little, but more often nothing. That's the one I know best. We don't like it at all, said Christian. They rode on, and Naidong continued singing. It was only in the late afternoon that the landscape began to change. Little sand hills appeared, each with its scraggy tamarisks. Gradually the tamarisks became bigger, scrub showed up, and finally isolated poplars and little strips of woodland. But there was no continuous rows of trees here, such as fringed the two other rivers. Even the grass grew only in patches, and the blades were thinner than on the Narrengal. The twigs were thinner, too, and even the poplars looked frail and threatened rather than firmly and permanently rooted. Between the trees one could see far out over the desert to the distant blue mountains. The Moringal flowed through a wide bed of gravel, and the sand banks were larger than the narrow rivulets. These were really only little brooks across which one could jump easily, but the water was as clear as a mountain spring. On the opposite bank stood the Chinese money changer's yurt, and Mr. Ping's wares lay under a gray tent canvas beside it. The poodle barked and Mr. Ping came out, but it was already too late. His vicious watchdog rushed to meet the poodle, and right in the middle of the Moringal, on a sandbank, the battle started. The two dogs fought savagely, while the owners, the one party on camels, the other on foot, stood on either bank, calling, Dog, come back! Naidong looked on unconcerned and let his horse drink. The camels pressed forward to the water, and Good Fortune said calmly, It can't be helped. The dogs are going to eat each other up. No, cried Christian desperately, raising his whip. He wanted to drive his camel out to the scene of the battle, but Affliction held him back. That's not necessary, he cried. Just wait a moment. He slipped down from his camel and picked up two stones, and then, very calmly and carefully, he took aim. Mr. Ping's yellow dog, which had just got on top, gave a leap and a howl and ran off with the poodle after him. Affliction aimed and let fly again. There, he said, the fight is decided. They could actually see the stone bouncing on the poodle's hindquarters. He doubled up and ran back to the sandbank, whimpering. Christian, Big Tiger, and Good Fortune were astounded, and Naidong turned round in his saddle, raised his two thumbs skywards, and shouted, A magnificent shot! On the other bank stood Mr. Ping. You've hit my dog nine-tenths dead, he shouted. You'll have to pay for him. Affliction mounted, and while the camels were slowly drinking and squirting water around, he said apologetically, I didn't mean to really hurt them, and I beg pardon of the owners. That's all right, said Big Tiger. You're a master marksman. Could you teach me stone throwing? Asked Christian. Is there a way of learning that art? Asked Big Tiger. There's a way, said Affliction, but it's a long one. My grandfather taught me about stones, and my father trained me in marksmanship. People who live in the mountains of La Brong and have no guns have to learn to throw stones. As a boy, I practiced every day while I herded the goats. When I could hit a tree at 50 paces, my grandfather died. After another 3 years, I seldom missed a pole, even at 100 paces. By the time I never missed at all, my father died. I had no fear of wild dogs or stray wolves by then. Later, I became a soldier and learned to shoot. But shooting is no art. It has only spoiled my stone throwing. You saw how badly I threw right now. They all gazed in amazement at Affliction, who added sadly, I meant just to graze your dogs. Please excuse my lack of skill. Meanwhile, the camels and the horse had drunk their fill, and Nidong led the way across the Morengal. The hoofs clattered over the gravel, and the camel's pads crunched it. The poodle lay waiting on the sandbank. He tried to wag his tail, but it hurt. Then he trotted along beside Christian and Big Tiger, lapping water now and then and glowering at the other bank where his enemy had withdrawn. Mr. Ping, who now recognized Nidong, was completely appeased. Oh, he cried with joyful emotion. Greetings to the esteemed Mr. Picture Sheet. Have you had a good journey, old uncle? How is your dog? Asked Nidong. Splendid! Couldn't be better, said Mr. Ping, giving Affliction an angry look. But then he noticed the red silk tassel of Good Fortune's pistol and its owner's elegant military bearing, and his tone changed. What distinguished visitors, he sighed. Ah, please do come into my miserable hut. Christian, Big Tiger, and Affliction tied up the camels. When they entered the tent, Mr. Ping was already serving bean noodles. Nidong was sitting on the seat of honor, smoking. Good Fortune, who noticed that his identity puzzled Mr. Ping, left him guessing. Was the old Marin with you? Inquired Nidong after Mr. Ping had handed out some warmed barley brandy. My heart has long been depressed by the absence of his visit, confessed Mr. Ping. Had he some matter to discuss with me? Not that I know of, replied Nidong. It only just occurred to me to ask. The venerable old Marin is tough in business, Mr. Ping remarked cautiously. So am I, said Nidong. At this, Mr. Ping gave up on any attempt at investigation. Plainly, he had lost some deal, and not a small one either, for the old Marin did not trade just in saucepans and reels of cotton. He dealt in horses and camels and in complicated money transactions where one can either gain or lose. But the Marin never lost, for he accepted no paper notes and dealt only in gold or silver. In fact, wicked tongues whispered that he was the banker of the venerable chief. When they had finished the bean noodles, Nidong beckoned Mr. Ping to his side. I need various articles, he said. First of all, an iron cooking grate. Mr. Ping remarked sadly that the price of iron had risen terribly. Then he timidly took Nidong's hand. The men's long sleeves fell over their joined hands, and no one could see what they were doing. While they sat solemnly opposite each other, Nidong kept his eye fixed on Mr. Ping, watching for any possible shiftiness, and Mr. Ping watched Nidong equally closely in order to exploit to the full the least sign of yielding. Unfortunately, both were so well versed in the game that neither could catch the other out. Their business was done mainly by a silent and very secret play of the fingers. Mr. Ping pressed Nidong's hand twice with the thumb and once with the little finger. He was asking a shameless price. Nidong's face remained impassive. With a single pressure of the thumb, he indicated his counteroffer. This was as expected. But Mr. Ping made a grimace of pain to show how deeply the offer had offended him. He let go Nidong's hand indignantly, but when that didn't work, his hand returned penitently to Nidong's. Eventually, they agreed on 1.5 silver batses, and the bargain was clinched. They let go hands, and a sigh of relief went through the tent. I also need 40 pounds of the best flour, said Nidong boldly. Oh, Picture Sheet, sighed Mr. Ping. I advise you to have the second best. It is blossom white like the best, and even if it's a bit more gray, that's no harm. Your hand, said Nidong, I must have the best. When their hands joined and the sleeves hid them, Nidong pinched the ball of Mr. Ping's thumb as a greeting. Mr. Ping remained very friendly. He knew that Nidong dared not lose face, either before him or before his guests, once he had been so rash as to demand the best flower. Well, if you must have it, you must, mumbled Mr. Ping, shrugged his shoulders, and by a firm pressure of the hand, naming an outrageous price from which he came down little by little. When their hands separated, Mr. Ping took down his calculating board and by pushing about some balls, noted the prices agreed, but he did it all so quickly, hiding it the while with his coat, that even Big Tiger could not read the prices. Mr. Ping owed this discretion to his customers. In this way, Nidong bought a kettle, a brick of tea, some salt, a few pounds of bean noodles, garlic, mutton fat, and a small water cask, which Christian and Big Tiger filled. The goods were weighed and packed and loaded on the pack camel in two even packs, one on each side. We're off, said Good Fortune. Nidong nodded, and while Good Fortune tightened the cinches, Nidong drew Affliction aside. I have got two horses from you, he said. I know nothing of that, declared Affliction. The horses didn't belong to me. We must look at this matter correctly, Nidong explained. The Amban of Suchow wants to shoot you dead. Am I to give him two horses as a reward, one of them, moreover, an ambler? It would be contrary to all custom and a great injustice. Affliction stepped timidly back and said he didn't want to commit any injustice. Nor do I, declared Nidong. It would sadden me for the rest of my life. Therefore, I sold the horses yesterday to a man who is taking them to Ningxia today. That's a long way off. But they're not my horses, Affliction reminded him. Hamaga, said Nidong, the horses are sold and paid for, and I have bought your provisions with the money. But there was a balance, and here it is, quick! And he pressed a heavy little package into Affliction's hand. Affliction put it away with a sting of conscience, but Nidong didn't worry. Then he went up to Mr. Ping, who was standing by the yurt door, and said, I'll stay with you a little. Mr. Ping smiled sourly. Then Good Fortune came up with Big Tiger, Christian, and Affliction in a row behind him. They all bowed and raised their hands to their foreheads, and Good Fortune said, Fate bids us depart. We do not know where it will lead us, but wherever we go, we shall remember your noble kindness. May your days be joyful and peaceful. And with this Mongolian greeting, he offered Nidong a perfectly new, especially fine haddock, woven with lucky symbols. He had extorted it from Mr. Ping on the strength of the big purchase while Nidong was talking to Affliction. Nidong accepted the haddock, and Mr. Ping exclaimed, Oh, what a rarely beautiful piece! When all were mounted, Good Fortune rode off in front. Se yabona, cried Nidong and Mr. Ping. Se sotyena, cried Christian and Big Tiger. The poodle didn't know what to do. First he went with the riders, but then turned back and stood barking in front of Nidong. Dog, come here, cried Big Tiger. Off with you, cried Nidong. But the poodle jumped around and would not leave Nidong. It can't be helped, said the latter, seizing his whip. But this did not help. At last Mr. Ping produced the leather collar with which he tied up his own shaggy dog at night beside his stack of wares. It costs a silver bot, he said. We'll discuss that later, growled Nidong. Give it to me. Thus the poodle got a collar. Nidong put a rope on it, and Christian and Big Tiger turned back once more. As Nidong came up to them, the three found themselves alone together, Good Fortune and Affliction having gone on ahead, and Mr. Ping having returned to his yurt. When you meet the venerable chief, said Nidong, say to him, the Mongol Nidong of the Torgut tribe, called Picture Sheet, greets the venerable chief and asks him please to send the silver boxes direct to Nidong, who lives at the Narin Gaul, instead of by the old Marin. Do you understand?
Yes, we understand everything, said Christian. We will give your message, said Big Tiger.
Farewell, my children, cried Nidong cheerfully. He handed Christian the leash and stroked the poodle's black coat. For a long time he stood there, looking after the riders and the poodle, until they became smaller and smaller, and the sun went down. I put one over on the old Marin this time, he thought with satisfaction.